David fled from Naoth in Ramah and came to Jonathan and asked, "What have I done? What did I do wrong? How have I sinned against your father so that he wants to take my life?" Jonathan said to him, "No, you won't die. Listen, my father doesn't do anything great or small without telling me. So why would he hide this matter from me? This can't be true." But David said, "Your father certainly knows what you have come to, that you have come to look favorably on me. He has said, 'Jonathan must not know of this, or else he will be grieved.'" David also swore, "As surely as the Lord lives, and as you yourself live, there is but a step between me and death." Jonathan said to David, "Whatever you say, I will do for you." So David told him, "Look, tomorrow is the new moon, and I am supposed to sit down and eat with the king. Instead, let me go, and I'll hide in the field until the third night. If your father misses me at all, say, 'David urgently requested my permission to quickly go to his town, Bethlehem, for an annual sacrifice there involving the whole clan.' If he says, 'Good,' then your servant is safe. But if he becomes angry, you will know he has evil intentions. Deal faithfully with your servant, for you have brought me into a..." "Deal faithfully with your servant, for you have brought me into a covenant with you before the Lord. If you have done anything wrong, then kill me yourself. Why take me to your father?" "No," Jonathan responded. "If I ever find out my father has evil intentions against you, wouldn't I tell you about it?" So David asked Jonathan, "Who will tell me if your father answers you harshly?" He answered David, "Come on, let's go out to the field." So both of them went out to the field. "By the Lord, the God of Israel, I will sound out my father by this time tomorrow or the next day. I will find out that he is favorable towards you. Will I not send for you and tell you? If my father intends to bring evil on you, may God punish Jonathan and do so severely. If I do not tell you and send you away, so you may go in peace. May the Lord be with you just as he was with my father. If I continue to live, treat me with the Lord's faithful love. But if I die, don't ever withdraw your faithful love from my household. No, not even when the Lord cuts off every one of David's enemies from the face of the earth." Then Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, May the Lord hold David's enemies accountable. Jonathan once again swore to David in his love for him, because he loved him as he loved himself. Then Jonathan said to him, "Tomorrow is the new moon. You'll be missed because your seat will be empty. The following day, hurry down and go to the place where you hid on the day this incident began, and stay beside the rock Azel. I will shoot 3 arrows beside it as if I'm aiming at a target. Then I will send the young man and say, 'Go and find the arrows.' Now if I expressly say to the young man, 'Look, the arrows are on this side of you, get them,' then come, because as the Lord lives, it is safe for you, and there is no problem. But if I say this to the youth, 'Look, the arrows are beyond you,' then go, for the Lord is sending you away. As for the matter you and I have spoken about, the Lord will be a witness between you and me forever." So David hid in the field.
I wanted to tell you about a story when I was at school. I was in, I believe it was early year 9, had a good friend called Alistair. He was my next door neighbour, tall guy. Some of you have heard about this guy. He and I got into lots of mischief at school. A fruit fight once that we got involved in that didn't turn out so well for me, when the guy that I hit on the back of the head with an apple, he and his mates made life very, very hard for me for the next few weeks, until they eventually got me back with rotten fruit shoved in my hair and my face and down my shirt and so on. Well, in another incident with Alistair, we were mucking around after gym, and in the change rooms, there were these old-style lockers. This is the closest picture I could find to them. But they had like a metal handle coming out of the door with the padlock would go through. And so there's all these metal handles coming out, which you would take off the padlock and you'd turn the handle to open the locker door. Anyway, we're in the change room, and at the school I went to, guys wore ties, the Forest High School, and Alistair couldn't find his tie. And so I stupidly said, because he was getting frustrated, and I knew there was some tension between him and this other fellow called David Phillips. And so I just said, oh, Dave Phillips took it. So Alistair turns, goes across to the other side of the change room, grabs Dave Phillips by the shirt, lifts him and rams him into the lockers, into the metal handles, which are sticking into his back, and says, where's my tie? And Dave Phillips is like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm going, Alistair, I was only joking, which I shouldn't have said, because then Dave Phillips knew that I had said that he had the tie. And so Dave Phillips and his mates, they then were out to get me, because Dave was very embarrassed that Alistair had picked him up in front of the class and pushed him up against the lockers. A bit of pain in his back as well. So I was pretty good at doing this. I did this a number of times with different incidents at school. I knew how to avoid getting bashed up. And that was, at recess, what you do, rather than going into the playground, you go and stand outside the science staff room and you just stand there. And people are out in the corridor outside looking and saying, come on out, we'll get you. And I'm on detention, I can't come out. And so I'd stand outside the science staff room until the teacher would come out and say, why are you out here? And I'd say, oh, I'm on detention. Who's put you on detention? And I'd say one of the science teachers, they'd go in, that science teacher would come out and go, I didn't put you on detention. Oh, didn't you? Oh, I thought I was on detention. No. Oh, okay. And so then I'd go to the math staff room and I'd spend lunchtime outside the math staff room. And I kept doing this until no staff room wanted me anymore. And then Dave Phillips got me. But I was living in fear of this guy who was out to get me because of my behaviour. And in the passage that we just had read to us, we see lots of people who are living in fear. And I don't know whether or not that's your experience, whether you live in fear, whether you go to school and you know that there's someone there who's been giving you a hard time and you're a bit afraid to go to school, or perhaps you might be afraid of someone in your street or the dog that lives in a particular house if you do a pamphlet run and you know that that dog's going to come out and give you grief, and so you're afraid and you go quietly past that house and so on. There might be something else that you're afraid of. You might be afraid of perhaps the sporting team that you've let them down last time, and you turn up this time and make the same mistake and have a home goal or something like that, and they're going to bag you out. I don't know. There might be all sorts of reasons why we might live in fear. Maybe it's we know we haven't studied for the exam, and so we're going to sit there and we're going to turn open the paper and read the question and have no idea what it's asking us. And who has dreams of that happening? Come on. Yeah, good. I'm not the only one. I still get those dreams. And then I wake up and go, oh, I don't have to sit another exam. How cool is that? Sorry, but some of you still have exams. There are lots of reasons we live in fear. David is living in fear at the start of this passage because, as we saw in chapters 18 and 19, the king, Saul, is trying to kill him. 11 times he makes an attempt on David's life, we counted. Now his son, Saul's son Jonathan, loves David and has made a commitment to David. At the beginning of chapter 18, he took off his royal robe and he gave it to David, signifying that as far as he was concerned, David was the one who should be ruler next after his father Saul and not Jonathan. At the end of chapter 20, we saw that Saul, in his opposition to David, trying to get him and kill him, was humiliated by God. God's spirit came upon him and Saul was forced to take off his robes, indeed everything, until he was stark naked and then lay on the ground prophesying. He was humbled by God in his opposition against God's chosen king, who was David. Now, Jonathan does not know about most of what we know with regard to Saul trying to kill David. And so when David comes up to Jonathan here at the beginning of chapter 20 and says to him, your father is trying to kill me. So he goes, David flees from Naoth in Ramah and comes to where Jonathan is. And he says, what have I done? What did I do wrong? How have I sinned against your father so that he wants to take my life? And of course, Jonathan doesn't know this is what Saul wants to do. He did know at one point, and he had questioned his father about it. And if you look at chapter 19, verse 6, you can see Saul listened to Jonathan's advice and swore an oath, as surely as the Lord lives, David will not be killed. So as far as Jonathan is concerned, his father has sworn an oath. David will not be killed. He's safe. Yet here is David coming and saying, what have I done wrong that your dad wants to kill me? So Jonathan's response is, no. You can read it. Look there. It says very clearly, Jonathan said to him, no, you won't die. Listen, my father doesn't do anything great or small without telling me. Why would he hide this matter from me? This can't be true. And so David has to swear an oath to try and convince Jonathan that, yes, it is true. Your dad's trying to kill me. And Jonathan's caught in this dilemma. Is dad doing something behind my back? Has he told me one thing and made a promise to me, and yet he's going the other way to try and kill my friend David? And so they end up arranging together a way to find out whether or not Saul is actually trying to kill David. So, Jonathan says to David, verse 4, whatever you say, I will do for you. And David has this plan. There's the festival tomorrow that starts for the new moon. I'll be supposed to sit down and eat with the king, but instead let me go. I'll hide in the field until the third night. If your father misses me at all, you can say that I asked to go back home to Bethlehem for an animal sacrifice. And if he says good, then I'll be safe. But if he becomes angry, you will know he's got evil intentions. And then he pleads with Jonathan, deal faithfully with your servant, for you have brought me into a covenant with you before the Lord. So they've made an agreement. This was back when the robe was taken off and given to David. We've made an agreement and a covenant. So he says, if I've done anything wrong, then kill me myself. But why take me to your father? And then Jonathan again, no, I'm not going to break the covenant. If I ever find out my father has evil intentions against you, wouldn't I tell you about it? So he says, yeah, but who will tell me if your father answers you harshly? And so Jonathan then says, come on, let's go out into the field. And so they go out into the field. Now, when I got to that line, when I was reading this passage, I was like, oh, deja vu. I've heard this line before. Let's go out into the field together. Does anyone know where that happens? Cain and Abel. See, earlier in the scriptures, in Genesis 4, Cain says to his brother Abel, let's go out to the field. And while they're in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. So I read this verse and I'm thinking, Jonathan's going to take David out in the field. He's going to do him in. He's going to side with his father. It's a bit like those Alfred Hitchcock movies or these other horror movies where someone's going down the dark street and there's footsteps they can hear behind them and you think, this is it, this is it. But of course, it's just what Alfred Hitchcock was famous for. It's a red herring, right? You think one thing's going to happen, but it's a distraction from what's really going on and the person's safe. And we have that here. We've got this moment. Let's go out in the field. But all is well. Jonathan doesn't do anything to harm him. Instead, he says, by the Lord, the God of Israel, verse 12, I will sound out my father by this time tomorrow or the next day. If I found out that he's favourable toward you, will I not send for you and tell you? But if my father intends to bring evil on you, may God punish Jonathan. He talks about himself in the third person here. May God punish me and do so severely if I do not tell you and send you away so you may go in peace. May the Lord be with you just as he was with my father. So Jonathan recognizes that God was with his father but has left him. And of course we know that God is now with David. And so Jonathan is very much relying on God, as is David through all of this. You'll see lots of references, and I think in the discussion questions you get to look at them all the times that there's trust in God to be at work. If I continue to live, he says, treat me with the Lord's faithful love. But if I die, don't ever withdraw your faithful love from my household, not even when the Lord cuts off every one of David's enemies from the face of the earth. So David was afraid because of Saul trying to kill him. But Jonathan here is showing that he's also afraid. He's afraid that when David becomes king, he will forget the friendship that he has with Jonathan. So he tries to get Jonathan to come into an agreement with him that he'll be safe when David becomes king. And God, he recognises there again, is going to destroy the various enemies of David. And that includes Jonathan's father, Saul. So Jonathan made a covenant with the house of David, saying, "May the Lord hold David's enemies accountable." He once again swore to David in his love for him because he loved him as he loved himself. Notice it says there that the covenant wasn't just made with David. It was made with the house of David. And there straight away we get an indication that David's rule will continue on. That there will be what we call a dynasty. That where Saul was king but Jonathan will not become king, when David is king, his son will become king. And then his son will become king. He will have a house, the house of David, that will continue to rule. And so the covenant that Jonathan makes is not just with David, but with David's son who will rule, and then his grandson who will rule after him, and so on, going down the line. And of course, David keeps the promise that he makes to Jonathan, and you'll see that in discussion groups when you look up where that's done. So, this is the plan. David goes and hides in the field. Well, what happens? I haven't actually told you the plan, have I? After the agreement, he says, "You go and hide in the field. I'll question my father if you're missing. I'll tell him what's going on. If there's a problem, when I come out with my little attendant guy and I shoot arrows in the field, if I shoot them beyond you and say to him, go further to find them, you'll know that it's not safe to come back." So that's what's decided. David hides and the festival begins. And everyone gathers at the table for the feast. And you've got Saul, the king, is there. And opposite him is his son, Jonathan. And next to the king is Abner. Now, Abner is the general. The king's general looks after the army. And then there's a seat there that's empty that David would be sitting in. And so Saul looks at this and thinks, oh, well, maybe he's unclean, which means he can't come to the festival. He'd be unclean until nighttime, and so perhaps he'll be here tomorrow. So he doesn't say anything. But then the next day, David's seat is empty again. So he questions Jonathan, and he says, what's the story here? How come the son of Jesse hasn't come? So you'll notice it there in verse down the bottom of the column 27. David's place was still empty, and Saul asked his son Jonathan, why didn't Jesse's son come to the meal either yesterday or today? Now, how does he refer to David? Jesse's son, right? He can't even bring himself to name David because he's so afraid of David and so envious of David because David is so popular and successful and he knows that God is with him. So he won't even name him. But by calling him Jesse's son, he's actually recalling what happened earlier in 1 Samuel. That should not say 1 Samuel chapter 4. It should say just 1 Samuel chapter 16. The Lord said to Samuel, this is when Saul had done so badly as king and Samuel was the prophet who anointed the next king. The Lord said to Samuel, how long are you going to mourn for Saul since I've rejected him as king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go. I am sending you to Jesse of Bethlehem because I have selected a king from his sons. Saul knows nothing of this verse. This was all done in secret. And so Samuel went to Jesse's house and in secret anointed David. Only David's family knows that that has happened. But we find in this passage, Saul is referring to David as the son of Jesse, which reminds us he is the anointed one. He is the one whom God has set aside to be king. And how come he hasn't come to the feast? Jonathan answered, verse 28, David asked for my permission to go to Bethlehem. He said, please let me go because our clan is holding a sacrifice in the town and my brother has told me to be there. So now if you are pleased with me, let me go so I can see my brothers. And that's why he didn't come to the king's table. Well, Saul is furious at this. He's angry at Jonathan. He shouts, you're a son of a perverse and rebellious woman. Don't I know that you're siding with Jesse's son? to your own shame and to the disgrace of your mother. Every day Jesse's son lives on earth, you and your kingship are not secure. Now send for him and bring him to me. He deserves to die. Oh, he's pretty fired up. Jonathan answers his father back. They're the exact same questions that David asked Jonathan in the beginning of the chapter. Why is he to be killed? What has he done? Then Saul threw his spear at Jonathan to kill him. So Jonathan then knew that his father was determined to kill David. He got up from the table in fierce anger, didn't eat any food that second day of the new moon, for he was grieved because his father's shameful behavior toward David. And in the morning, he goes out into the field, he shoots the arrows, the kid goes off to get the arrows, and he says, I think it's gone beyond you further. And that's the signal to David, it's not safe. You were right, my father wants to kill you. And so then the attendant is sent off with the arrows back home, and David comes out from behind the rock where he's been hiding, and he and Jonathan have a bit of a teary moment, a cry, because Jonathan realises that his best mate, the one that he's got his allegiance to, has to leave. So he kisses him, there's a hug, there's a goodbye, lots of tears. And we're reminded of Psalm 2, kiss the son, lest he be angry. And that's exactly what Jonathan does with David, the one that God has chosen to be king. Well, in Luke, Jesus says this, if anyone comes to me and does not hate his own father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and even his own life, he cannot be my disciple. Now, I've chosen this verse to look at because in this story, Jonathan is doing this. He has his allegiance to God's king, and it comes with opposition with his own family. He actually has to turn against his father and help David to escape. And for some of us, we know the reality of a verse like this. Many of us here, though, have parents who are Christian. And so to be a Christian and to trust in Jesus, God's chosen king, doesn't create opposition with our parents. But for some, it does. Or it might even cause opposition not just with parents but with friends at school if they know that you're Christian. And that might be one of the reasons that you have fear because of the opposition that you face because of your faith. This is a story I've told a number of times before about a girl who was in youth group here at Genali High School. We're talking in the 1990s, right? She had opposition from a teacher who knew she was a Christian, and he would always have a go at her in class. He'd say, blah, 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 but Zoe doesn't believe that, do you, Zoe? Because Zoe believes in imaginary friends in the sky or whatever he was saying with regard to God. And this would happen lesson after lesson after lesson. And in the class were some other Christian girls. And one of them, a girl called Emma, was just jack of the way that this teacher was treating Zoe. And so she'd worked it out along with some of the other Christian girls in the class. So when the teacher says, oh, yeah, but Zoe, you wouldn't agree with that, would you? Because you believe in fairy tales and so on. Emma stood up in the class and said, excuse me, sir. And he's, yes, Emma. She says, I believe what Zoe believes. How come you don't pick on me? And then another hand goes up. And it's Amanda. And he says, yes, Amanda. And she says, sir, when you start picking on Emma, make sure you pick on me too, because I'm also a Christian. I wouldn't want to miss out. Then another girl does the same thing. Another girl, there's like five of them standing up, calling the teacher to account for his behaviour. And of course, he stopped picking on all of them as a result of that behaviour. The girls took a stand. They knew that it would come at great risk for them to stand for Jesus and to say, this is where my allegiance is. If you are finding it really hard because of your trust in Jesus and it's created opposition for you, perhaps in your home, perhaps at school, perhaps in other areas, don't try and do it alone. Don't give up your allegiance, but talk to one of your leaders or one of your other friends or perhaps another Christian that you're in contact with who can encourage and support you. We're going to have this going public segment after the song where we're going to ask you to take a risk and to come up to the microphone and to share with us where it's hard for you to have your allegiance to Jesus out in the open because you know it brings opposition. Now, I don't want you to name people that others might know that are here, like, you know, oh, there's this guy at school called blah, blah, blah. We don't want to hear that, but we just want to hear what are the struggles that some of us face because we want to pray for you, particularly if you've found a way of managing when it's been difficult or perhaps a Bible verse that's been an encouragement for you to keep trusting Jesus that would be an encouragement for others to hear, then there's an opportunity to share that as you get up as well. The reason we're doing this is because we don't want you to be on your own. And if you get up here and you share, I'm finding it hard at the moment, this is the situation, immediately you're going to have 70 people praying for you tonight and supporting you and wanting to encourage you so that you're not alone. So be courageous, take the opportunity, because you're not going to find enemies here when you share about your faith. Okay? Let me pray. Dear Lord God, we thank you so much for Jonathan, for his allegiance to your King, David. And we recognize that came at great cost to him. It meant setting himself out in opposition to his father. And that would have brought lots of hurt and pain for him. And yet he knew what was right and he knew the one that you had chosen to be the ruler. Father, help us who have our trust in Jesus because we recognize that he is your King. Help us to have allegiance to him even in the face of opposition, even if it comes from people who are close to us. Help us, Lord, to get alongside one another when there are those around us who are struggling and finding it hard, that we might be a support and an encouragement to keep looking to you and depending upon you in the midst of difficulty. And we pray that when we have the going public segment after the song, that you might give courage to those of us who would be able to come and share so that others might know and support them, but also so that we might hear some of the ways people are managing and how you're helping them through these difficulties. And we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.